Okay, thank you very much, Ian. It's a great pleasure to be here and to acknowledge the support of the James Martin 21st Century School in something which we call the Particle Therapy Cancer Research Institute. This is already, as you see, a collaboration between me, I'm a card-carrying particle physicist, and Bledin, who's a card-carrying clinical oncologist. So what's the issue? Well, we have a fair chance before we die of being afflicted with cancer. There's a profile which increases with age. And certainly, I think many of you, when I grew up in the kind of 50s, you know, you would hear aunts and uncles talking in hushed tones of relatives who had caught cancer, and you couldn't really mention it because cancer in those days was effectively equivalent to a death sentence. Now, there have been enormous increases in the effectiveness of therapy over the years. But these therapies have side effects, mild to severe, and I think the bulk of them are actually on the severe end of mild to severe. There are three effective methodologies. There's surgery, which is effective in almost half of cases. Now, surgery is certainly not non-invasive and is certainly uncomfortable. There's chemotherapy, which we all know has rather disastrous side effects, but contributes actually surprisingly a small proportion to the successful cure of cancer. It's about 11%, which is not quite the message you would get from listening to the Today program for a year. But that just tells you, I think, that Big Pharma is very rich. The second most effective treatment for dealing with cancer is radiotherapy. And radiotherapy actually goes back well over 100 years. X-rays were discovered in 1895 by Röntgen, and by 1897, the first patient had been treated with X-rays for cancer. We don't have a picture there, but it was very effective. 70 years later, the lady was still living, although one of the side effects is that her back was somewhat disfigured. And that's something which we'll come back to. Now, I said most current radiotherapy uses high-energy X-ray beams from a linear accelerator. Linear accelerators are things I understand. I'm a physicist. That's what I play with. That's where I get my fun. Our linear accelerators look different from this. The reason they look different is that this has to be seen in a hospital environment and therefore needs to be in a nice white casing and surrounded by people who look like they know what they're doing, whereas in a physics lab, they're left open to the elements so that you can see the gubbins, and it's surrounded by graduate students in sweaters and jeans. Now, this is very effective, but there is, in fact, a better way. And the better way uses not X-rays, but charged particles, in particular protons or other light ions. Now, this is more effective for reasons which I'll explain in a moment, called the Bragg peak. I'll show you what that is. But, of course, nothing comes without a price, and the price that you have to pay for a more effective treatment is that the accelerator is more complicated than the simple medical LINAC, which is about 6 million volts. You need to get up to 250 million volts for protons and the equivalent of more than a gigavolt for carbon ions, for example. And therefore, you're into machines which, from my point of view, are much more interesting than LINACs because they have more moving parts. But you need to make them suitable for use in a hospital environment. So why go to the trouble of doing something which is more complicated? And the basic reason is given here, that if I look at the energy deposition of a proton as it passes through what's here water, which is a fairly good model for the body, then you see that on entry there is a relatively low dose. But towards the end of the range, an enormous amount of energy is deposited. And therefore, if this is where your tumor is, then you've achieved something which you would find quite attractive. I would certainly find it attractive if I was unfortunate to get cancer. Namely, that there is a mechanism of putting an enormous amount of energy in the thing which is doing me harm, and a relatively small amount of energy in the bits of my body which are still healthy. This is illustrated actually even more here. If I look at the energy deposition as a function of the depth from conventional X-rays compared with protons, you see that with a single beam, in fact, X-rays, I do more damage to the healthy tissue than I do to the tumor. Now, of course, there are ways of dealing with that, and Bledin will discuss that in a moment. But if this is my tumor site, then by tuning the energy of my proton or carbon beam, I can move this peak successively through the tumor. And I can, with just a single beam direction, deposit more dose in the tumor than I do in the healthy tissue. So that's, if you like, the physicist. Now, of course, when I go and see my doctor, I don't expect her to tell me how to find the Higgs. And therefore, I can well understand that doctors don't like physicists telling them how to cure cancer. So I hand over to Bledin, who will take it further.
Well, thank you, Ken. This is the situation with two fields of X-rays pointing at a tumor and a circular target here. The beam passes through the entire thickness wherever it is given, but it decreases with depth. But you can see what we call exit dose phenomena around here. This could be the head of a person or any other part. Now, with protons or ions, if I use two fields of gain, I don't get dose beyond target, and I can have a safety margin around the tumor as well. But notice the difference here, zero dose and quite a lot of dose. Now, this could be the brain of a young child, developing, growing, and developing its intelligence and so forth. Or it could be a brain of an older person with atherosclerotic disease and so forth, and you want to avoid additional damage and so forth. And of course, zero dose means a reduced probability of developing cancer from radiation itself. So in all, we're depositing about 2 to 10 times less radiation in the body, and yet giving the same dose to the target, or actually dose escalating the target. This is the sort of equipment you need, a small synchrotron about 15 meters wide in that building in a Japanese hospital. That comes at about £35 million. The gantry to rotate the beam across the patient is about £10 million per room, and that's the view the patient gets of it. Now, this is what it means in practice. This is a child with a brain tumor called a medulloblastoma, which seeds through the spine, and we have to treat it with X-rays. And about 70 to 80% are cured with the application of radiation after surgery to the primary tumor. This is what happens in Britain. If I would treat the patient, the dose is passing along this color scale here, and you can see that the anterior organs are irradiated, and a lot of these patients die in later life of cancer. This is the American beam with protons. The beam is stops where the physician directs it to be. And you can see the effect on the heart here in terms of the British equivalent for British children. So let's look at some other examples. In Japan, for instance, you can have your lung cancer, screen-detected lung cancer, treated in one hospital visit using carbon ion beams, and with a very low dose to the surrounding lung, such that the lung function tests used in medicine do not show a significant reduction. The alternative with surgery is to remove the whole lobe of lung, and that leaves you short of breath, or use conventional X-ray therapy, 33 visits to the hospital, and shortness of breath afterwards. Primary cancer of the liver treated in Japan, the result 5 years later, the remaining liver is healthy. I cannot hope to achieve that in the UK. The patients are not even treated by radiation because of its toxicity. This is an example of a tumor on the kidney, primary tumor of the kidney, treated in Japan with carbon ions. My beams would have hit the spinal cord and the small bowel, and all sorts of havoc would have been caused for the patient here, perhaps chronic diarrhea as a side effect, hypertension and so forth. But this result over 5 years, you can see that the remaining kidney retains function. That's a functioning kidney from its architecture. So that's an outstanding result. But let me tell you, only 10 patients have received this treatment in the world at the moment. You, from seeing this talk, will know far more than your own doctors about this subject, because there's hardly any knowledge about it in the UK. This is cancer of the esophagus. This is the standard British textbook of three beams coming in with a lot of dose to the lungs, which are around here. Patients die of pneumonitis. If you add chemotherapy as well, they're more likely to die of pneumonitis or pneumonia. This is the Japanese dose distribution. Hardly any lung is treated. You've got a little envelope there and a little envelope there. 100% to the tumour, 15% to the spine. They cannot get side effects from that treatment, but there's a lot of side effects after this. And notice also, the Japanese can give 72 gray, the British give 54 at the Royal Marsden. But only about 100 patients worldwide have been treated this way so far. So we want to reduce the fear of cancer, improve the patient experience, increase dose where we can to cancer, because there's about a 1% increase in control on the dose response curve per unit increase in dose. So you get that sort of benefit from a 15 gray increase. The dose reduction to organs should lead to reduce or total absence of many of the side effects which I have seen in my career as a radiation oncologist. Chemotherapy is also better tolerated with the radiation because the bone marrow is irradiated rather less with the radiation beams. So this is what we are after: better quality of life, ability to contribute to society, etc. Now, what's the position in the world? The USA will soon have 12 functioning centres, Germany 6, Japan 8, and I'm afraid England 0. These other countries all have facilities with plans for expansion to large new centres. The cancer reform strategy at the end of last year by the government have made arrangements for patients to be sent abroad, 12 in the first year, isn't that great? Perhaps up to 400 if we're lucky over 5 years, and to explore the business case for a UK centre. So, the aims of the project, which we've come into rather late to the Institute, but we're very grateful to the school, is education, education, education. Now, somebody else said that sometime. we need of the public to be aware of this. The professions, particularly the medical professions, surgeons and so forth, need to be informed about the potential benefits of this, and of course the policy makers. In research, we certainly, Ken has got a lot of ideas for new forms of accelerators that are smaller, cheaper, more efficient, with a higher throughput, and work is going on in his department in physics on that. I'm interested in the biology and modelling mathematically what the outcomes of all this combination might be in patients. We need to encourage investment from the relevant funding sources, and our goal in the longer term is to perhaps establish an advanced technology centre using Ken's new technology here within Oxford University. Thank you.
Thank you.